And now, the Big D and Bubba Weekly Podcast.
Big D and Bubba, they have a show 5 days a week, but they don't get to say everything that's on their mind, so they have an extra one, and that's how we get the podcast. The podcast, the podcast. Big D and Bubba podcast. The podcast, the podcast.
You're not singing,
Big D and Bubba podcast.
There you go.
Nice. You know, none of us, except for Patrick, none of us know how to harmonize. So we all like hit whatever note Patrick hits.
How do you harmonize? Is it just something you know how to
like
do?
Like you go podcast and watch you do it and just hold it.
Me?
You.
Podcast.
Now Patrick.
See, that wasn't really good, but that's an example. Yes.
Okay. So one goes middle, high, and then low, and then that's
how
it works.
And there are certain notes that go with other notes.
Really?
You can't just do anything. Yes.
Like the Oak Ridge Boys, they're really good at harmonizing, or Little Big Town, or Big and Rich even. But theirs is different, though, isn't it?
Big and Rich usually sing the same note one octave apart. So it's the same. They're both singing the melody. They're just singing.
John goes high, and then Kenny goes
low. In a way,
low.
that is a harmony, but it's just different than most harmonies are actually singing different notes.
They have
notes.
Such a unique harmony. You know, just talking about Big and Rich, their harmonies are different because, you know, a lot of what Big Kenny does is he talks, and then he'll just hold the note he was talking. You know, because Big Kenny does his thing, and he's da-da-da-da, and that's where John jumps in, and they have a very unique
cool
sound.
Style.
It's very different. Like Walker McGuire, they harmonize, and in some ways, I kind of feel, even though Johnny sings, I kind of feel like you know, he's doing a little bit of the Big and Rich thing. You ever notice that? Like, he's kind of always the low guy.
Well, I mean, usually when you have two voices, one of them's low and one of them's high.
They have to be.
Like
Henry Gentry
like,
and all
always, but
like,
yeah.
He's high, I'm low.
I'm high right now.
Okay.
Yeah.
That was a joke, by the way. This podcast this week is brought to you by Outdoor Hands Skin Therapy Cream. We are big fans of Outdoor Hands. Got introduced to them, what, about a year ago?
Well, you know, they work. My son's had skin issues since he was a kid. Little kid, and it's the only thing it's really worked.
Like it's an eczema thing that he was dealing with.
Yeah, we did prescription stuff and creams and all that, and that's the only thing that works.
Well, as we tell you every day on the radio, Outdoor Hands Skin Therapy Cream, it works on your hands, your feet, your heels, anywhere, literally on your body that you have dry, cracked skin. You just pick up some Outdoor Hands, do it, you know, rub it in, work it in, and your skin will thank you.
This week was pretty crazy at my house because of my neighbor and stuff. And
a lot of people wanting us to talk about that on the podcast this week. I think we covered most of it on the show.
Yeah.
But I do think a recap is, you know, necessary because there were some great moments.
Well, let's kind of take it back a little bit. Early in the week, I came in and I was talking to you guys about how I was excited to put Christmas lights up. I put colored Christmas lights. We're going up. My neighbor across the street comes over and says, "Hey, man."
While you're in the middle of putting lights up.
Yeah. He says, "Hey, man." I go, "Hey, what's up, Bill?" And he goes, "Hey, I see you're putting your lights up. We're all trying to do white lights on the street this year."
Who?
We. And I said, "Oh, okay." Now, that puts me in a kind of a weird, like, I get what he's trying to do. He's trying to be cool about it.
Passive aggressive.
Very. And so I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, I just, you know.
Mine are up, I'm good.
Some kind of control freakiness about that bothers me so much.
Yeah.
You know?
So I put up my colored lights, and the next day my colored lights were down, and a whole really well done, nice white lights were put up in its place, and the colored lights were put in a bag by my garage.
So just to make sure everybody
understands that. He took it upon himself. Yeah.
He did. He went while you were sleeping and took your colored lights down and put white lights up.
Now, this was never sanctioned by the Homeowners Association. This was something Bill, your neighbor, and a couple other neighbors decided that, oh, it would look pretty if our little section of the street, because you're on a cul-de-sac, if our little section of the cul-de-sac would be all white lights, it would just be great because we would all match.
Yeah. So I say that on the air, and then all of a sudden, Bubba says, "Dude, we're gonna go out. And we're gonna be. It's gonna be a mission. We're going to go ninja, and it's going to be Operation Light Swap. So we went out, all three of us,
instead of taking the white lights down and putting the colored lights back on your house.
We took the colored lights, went next door, took down his white lights.
Because it's funnier.
And then put up my colored lights.
Because they were already there. You didn't have to buy any more.
We put his white lights in a bag, just like he did to my colored lights.
Can we talk about that mission, though, how fun it was?
Yeah.
Before we get to the resolution, because we're dudes. We're married dudes with kids. We don't get to go out and ninja up and get all camoed anymore. You know, so it was awesome. I mean, just getting all messy and just...
Bubba had mud on his face.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I didn't want to show my face. I'm very pale. So I took some mud from Big D's Landscaping and I rubbed it all over my face.
Totally necessary.
It was necessary. I looked pretty invisible.
Yeah, you looked ridiculous.
I looked awesome.
So
don't hate.
We put the lights up. Bubba brought zip ties for some ungodly reason.
It's way easier to hang them, you know, because you use zip ties and you're zip, zip, and they're on and they're good, and then the wind doesn't blow them down, and you know it really helps in trees and tall shrubs.
So they're up and they're done. We were so excited of what we had done.
Lots of on-air gloating. Lots of Twitter gloating, Facebook gloating. It was
nothing,
great.
Nothing happened for a day. The next day was fine. I went home that night. They were up. They were colored lights. Woo-hoo. And I was thinking, you know what?
Maybe he learned a lesson. He got beat and he realizes he shouldn't have changed your lights. And so...
So the next day, the next morning during the show, my wife sends me a text that says, hey, call me on the air. It's urgent. And with an LOL.
Which at that point, threw up a little flag. Sorry, I'm eating a banana.
So I called and she's like, Bill is outside cutting the lights down. With a hedge trimmer.
Can I share her phone call? Because I think it's great. I have it on tape here.
He's outside. He's got hedge clippers. And he's been cutting down the lights that we put up.
Are you kidding? He finally is doing something.
It's not little clippers either. It's like the big two-handed, big old hedge clippers.
Like hedge clippers? Mm-hmm. Well, because Bubba zip-tied them.
Well, I wanted them to last. I wanted to do a good quality job.
But those are my lights. Those are my colored lights.
But I also figured he would be reluctant to take them down if they were zip-tied.
The way he's cutting, I don't think he's just cutting the zip-ties. I think he's shredding those lights.
So this is going down right now. Holy cow.
So he's out there right now, Kath?
Yeah.
Does he look angry?
He's got one of those Griswold hats on.
The what?
A Griswold hat.
Oh.
You know the thing with the ear flap?
Yeah, that's him.
Okay, so he is cutting the lights off. And you said he's shredding?
It doesn't look like those lights are going to come off in one piece.
Dang it. Those are my lights. Those are mine.
Well, you have his lights that he hung up on your house.
Kathy, do you know where my hedge clippers are?
why would you get rid of the lights?
Because he's ruining my lights.
Yeah, but he's
it
got
is his house.
That's right, it's his house. He's got his lights are on your house whenever he took down your colored lights to put the white ones on. So until he, you know, were to take those off of your house, are they still on your house, Kathy?
Yes.
Okay. Until he were to take them off of your house, then I would think there's no harm, no foul. You're getting free white lights out of the deal.
No, I'm not getting free ones because my other ones, I just exchanged. He won.
And we put
I had colored lights and I didn't have white.
And we put up good LED ones and everything.
And now I have, now all I have is white. So he wins. Bill wins the whole thing.
Again, Kathy, you're saying that it doesn't look like your lights are coming off easily, so he's chopping them up, and they're not going to be salvageable.
I know. It looks like he's shredding them. Oh, he just looked over here. I'm getting away from the window.
Okay. All right. Well,
it doesn't look like it's very methodical at all. He's going to town.
Oh, great.
He's having fun.
Yeah, he's mad. All right. Thank you. I love you.
Sure. Love you.
She was awesome.
Yeah.
The fact that she was looking and the guy looked at her is great.
So, I have now, like, not talked to him. I haven't said anything to him. I haven't even seen him. I don't see him a lot anyway, but our paths haven't crossed.
Can I take a step back? I want you to think about the perspective of one of your other neighbors that you don't really talk to and that never talks to you or Bill. You know, there's the neighbor three or four houses down that never really knows what's going on. So they come home one night, and all the houses have white lights except your house that has colored lights. Then the next night they come home, and all the houses, including yours, have white lights.
And they're
then
like,
the
oh,
next night they come
the
home, and then the colored lights have moved across the street to Bill's house. And then the next night, the colored light, now it's all white again. Can you imagine what it must look like to someone who doesn't know what's going on?
The atheist three houses down.
Is going, why?
Who's just watching the light wars.
Are they taking turns? You know that neighbor's going, am I supposed to change my lights colored for one night? Is this some sort of thing I don't know about?
And what if you were Jewish? What if you'd had blue lights up? Because that is what Jewish homes do. If you ever see it, a lot of times they'll have their lights up for Hanukkah and all that, and they'll have the blue ones. What if you were Jewish?
Would it have been a hate crime.
It would have been a hate crime. His touching your lights would have been hate.
So he's got his white lights back up. I have white lights.
But
everyone
you did add
lights.
Some color.
I put one strip, and I put a Santa Claus blow-up inflatable, very small.
With the little airplane, but it's got the little airplane and propeller, and it's moving, and it's color.
Mm-hmm.
Just to show that you're not defeated.
But I know I am. But, you know, whatever.
You're not, dude.
Okay, sure.
I think you should add some more color back into it. I promise you, I don't think he will touch your lights ever again in the history of mankind. Because what you did,
does that.
What you did by taking it upon yourself, that's right, I'm taking myself out of this, by taking yourself and going and put the lights on his house, you showed him, hey, don't touch my house. You touch mine, I'll touch yours. So you won.
Yeah, I won. Thank you.
Whether he cut those lights down
or
not.
You don't sound like a victorious man.
I'm just over here cutting the net down.
Yeah.
I won. Yay me.
Yay you.
So, anyway, it is what it is.
I'm a little let down that you're so hurt by all this.
I'm not hurt by it. It's just I have to live with it. I have to live with him. Now
but
it's
you know
awkward.
What? He really did start it. Like
I know.
He did.
I know. I don't like confrontation. And so now I'm going to go home. I'll see him probably in the next few days.
Are you going to do that whole, oh, that was funny. Oh, and you're going to play it off that way? Or are you going to?
I don't know. Or maybe I don't know what I'm going to do till then. Or maybe I'll just be like, hey, man, what's happening? And not
and
even
just,
bring it up.
And just act like nothing happened.
Yeah. That's probably what I'll do. I'm so weak.
Well, I think if you played it off by saying, you know, it was fun to do that, that was great. You know, the boys thought it was cool, ha, 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 and whatever, then he's going to like you.
And hey, by the way.
You guys will be friends some more.
By the way, can I get those lights back that my mom gave me before she died?
The ones, yeah, the ones you took down.
Yeah, oh, I need to get those back.
And then you watch him squirrel away and squirm and go, ah, ah, ah. Because he sliced them all up with the hedge trimmers.
But I won't do that.
You should. You should.
So what are you guys doing for Christmas and stuff?
We are going to, for like the pre-Christmas thing, because starting on the 16th, my mom and dad are coming in town next week, I think. And starting on the 16th, all the way through Christmas Day, we have events on the calendar already planned. I have not a single free day during Christmas where I don't have something.
Is it kid stuff?
No, it's like my wife and like there's like different days of celebrating with different families because
oh,
you know
like parties and junk.
No. Just like we're having. I'll just break it down real easy. We're having a Christmas with this family, like where we get all of our families together with the kids and everybody, and we all celebrate and we swap gifts and all that.
With another like friends
yes.
family?
Then the next day we have Christmas with another family.
Why
then
are you doing Christmas with
day,
other families?
I don't know. And then it goes on and on and on. And Christmas Eve, we're having a party at my house for everybody. By the way, Patrick, if you don't have Christmas Eve's plans, you are invited. Big D, you as well. Just same. Stacy told me to ask you guys, so I'm asking you.
I'm going to go. I'm going out of town.
Okay.
Christmas.
You're going to miss a great shindig.
I bet I will.
Sounds like it. I love partying.
I know. It sounds like you've already been to 15 parties in a row, and you're really going to want to go to that one.
I hate parties. I hate parties. I hate having to entertain people. At my house, I hate parties more than anything else.
You know why?
Because they touch your stuff.
That's right. You know why that bothers you?
Because I love my stuff.
No, yeah. Go deeper.
Because?
Because? Say it.
I have no idea.
Say it. Because you...
What?
Have...
What?
Trust issues.
It's not even a trust issue thing. Yeah, I just I just don't like everybody all up in my stuff.
Touching your stuff. You know why? Because you don't trust them. You know why you don't trust them?
I know they're not going to steal stuff.
No, you don't. You don't know that.
I do. I know they're not going to steal stuff.
I like how this got unnecessarily deep and uncomfortable.
Listen, you're just going to be stuck in this this little box forever until you come to grips with it.
No, I just don't like having. Something has happened to me over the last several years. I can't handle like crowds and whatnot. Like I'm not Howard Hughes or anything, and it has nothing to do with germs. I don't like when like little kids are yelling all the time and all that kind of stuff.
I'm with him on that. That gets more annoying the older I get.
Yeah, it's like I can't handle it. And then whenever you get a big group, like several families together, and all the kids are being noisy and this and that, I just want to go and find a room that I can lock myself in and just turn on my video game and just check out. I know it sounds horrible. Maybe
it did sound a little Howard Hughesian by the time you got to the end.
No, it's
just
not.
Just play my video games, let my toenails grow. Don't bother me. They're growing.
It's weird. I used to not be like that. I used to love doing the parties and all that.
I don't know. I think you just...
Do you love going to parties? Do you love having parties at your house?
I don't mind it.
You never have parties at your house.
Well, not that you know about.
Ooh.
Yeah.
I don't invite you over because you're trust
issues. I love having parties. I love having people over to my house.
That's Patrick talking.
That's me.
Why?
I just do. I like being the host. I like that whole
thing. I like going to other people's houses much better. Like, I'm not a fan of even doing all that because at that point, I usually, when we go to friends' parties, I'll take a separate car than my wife and kids because they like to stay for the whole thing. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's not even a joke. No.
They stay for the whole thing. I go.
So, you said you go to two different cars?
Yes. I make an appearance. I hang out maybe an hour or so. All right. Well, cool. See you later. Bye.
Where's Bubba? Oh, he left.
Well, yeah.
He can only handle you people for a little while.
It's not even that. It's just something about parties. I'm just not into it now. And I love Christmas. I love the season. I love everything about it. But the parties in general, and it's not a Christmas party thing. It's Halloween parties and birthday parties and all that. I'm just not into parties.
Well, you're missing out.
Patrick, how many times have I gone to your parties that you've thrown?
Have you ever been to a party I threw? I don't think so.
I'm thinking.
Your wife and daughters, and therefore by proxy, you and I and Frankie, went to my ex-wife's baby shower when she was pregnant for my daughter six years ago.
I went to that.
But we weren't invited. We went because the women were going.
Right, but I went to that. I went to that.
Yeah. But that wasn't one of my parties. That doesn't really count.
That was whenever I found the pumpkin that had been on your front stoop.
Yeah, it was January. There was a pumpkin that was still there from October.
All slumped over.
Oh, yeah.
It wasn't slumped over.
It was like a deteriorated, mass of where a pumpkin used to be.
Yeah, it was like somebody hit it with a Slurpee ray and just melted there into the concrete.
This is where I'm supposed to make a joke about my ex-wife and her ability to be tidy and keep up with the house, but I'm not going to. I'm going to keep it.
She makes the same joke about you, so.
Yeah, well, yeah, that's funny because she was a stay-at-home wife who was supposed to be the housekeeper. So it's real funny that you would turn
Why does she have to be the housekeeper? Just because she's at the house?
Yes.
Oh, really?
If you now, don't have a job?
Did you guys discuss that beforehand?
I'll say.
Did she know that was part of her responsibility?
Yes.
Did you say you're going to be home, so you're going to clean?
We really shouldn't be doing this on the podcast for legal reasons. I really don't.
Legal reasons?
Oh,
I thought
yes.
The wedding, I mean, you've been divorced for a long time
now. Yeah, I know. That
now.
Doesn't mean it won't show. This tape won't end up in a custody hearing. I'm not saying anything else.
I like cleaning. I enjoy cleaning the house. Kathy isn't the best at it, and she'll tell you that. She's kind of cluttery.
I like cleaning toilets.
I like cleaning toilets, too.
Something about a good, clean toilet excites me.
Me, too.
I hate toilet germs.
But it's nasty. And I like getting all, like, big time. Do you use the one in there, like, here in the studio? I'll take
the brush?
No, the...
It's funny, because I will clean the toilet before I use it over here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Now, you clean inside the toilet?
Oh, yeah. I use the brush, and I do the inside of the bowl, and I get down into the little hole in the bottom, and then under the lip and all that kind of stuff.
I may start doing that. Yeah. I get the paper towel, and then I get a little bit of soap, hand soap. A
little wipe down?
Mm-hmm. And I wipe everything down, the seat, under it, underneath the seat, into those little hole, screw holes, you know, the little bumpers are in. Mm-hmm. And then I take it, and I throw it away. Then I wash my hands. Okay. Then I throw that away. And then I use that because using it completely wet, and then I dry using that, and then I throw it away. And I make sure I don't touch it again.
Yeah.
And
we
then
do the
I
same.
Use it.
Which means if two of us are doing that, we have a really clean bathroom here at the studio because there's only five people that even have access to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I want you to realize you're cleaning a bathroom that only five people ever use.
Right, and if
that
no
intensely.
One ever cleaned it, then it would be disgusting.
No, if Bubba
so
wouldn't,
thank us.
If Bubba wouldn't lock the cleaning lady out of the studio every weekend, she'd come in and clean it for you.
No, she wouldn't.
Actually, that's probably the only thing she can get to is the bathroom. So the bathroom gets cleaned by them, too.
I don't like people. Again, maybe you can say it's trust issues.
Right back at it.
I would rather come in here and vacuum my own studio floor than have somebody come in here to do it. We don't have a garbage can. This is something very interesting because I think we're the only radio studio in the world that doesn't have a trash can in it. We don't have one. Do you know why? Because trash cans stink.
Smell.
People throw stuff away and they don't take their trash out, especially if you only have one or two things being thrown away over the course of a month. Whatever it is that's at the bottom ends up smelling. So we're just like, you know, we don't want it to stink in here. This is a very comfortable work environment. So we don't have a trash can in here. They don't need to come in here to empty nothing. They don't have to come and clean the stuff. Big D and I, on a somewhat regular basis, police this studio without even having this discussion of keeping it clean.
All right.
You have to admit, we've been in here a year.
Yeah, and they still managed to clean, despite your best efforts to keep them out, they still managed to vacuum this floor every other week or so. So
well,
that's part of the reason it's this clean.
That's fine. But, I mean, look around. It looks pretty dang good for basically dudes.
And you know what everyone always says when they come in here? Oh, it smells so good in here. It doesn't stink.
Yeah. Everybody says it. Everybody. I love the vibe and
we're
smells.
We're very un-guy-like in that way. We're not gross
You
at
made
all.
Your own candles, for God's sake.
Which, by the way, what have I been doing this whole podcast for here? You hear that the
you
whole time?
You're snorting the candle?
Yes. It's the one you made, the pipe one.
Yeah.
It smells like, you know, grandpa's pipe or like the pipe my dad used to smoke like when I was a little kid.
Yeah, man.
Popped the top off and I've just been...
So good.
Yeah.
I got a bunch of good ones I'm going to make this weekend, dude. I've got...
Is that your new thing? I mean, who... Let's stop and then before you go into what the scents are, what is the process of making these candles?
You get a bag, you buy bags, like large 10 to 20 pound bags of, I use soy candle because it's better for the environment, better for the air you're breathing, and it burns slower, they last longer, so I get soy, and they're in like little chips.
This one burned fast.
Well, that one's got the wrong wick in it. That wick, see, if that had burned all of the wax, it would have lasted four times longer. I'm going to take that home, by the way, and melt it back down and redo it.
Okay.
Then you just you take a double boiler and you pour the. You have to measure out how much.
A double boiler.
Mm-hmm.
Meaning,
a double. It's just like a pan inside of a pan, and the bottom pan has water in it, and you heat it up, and it slowly.
Is
melts.
That like part of a wax kit or something?
No. You can use them. People do chocolate that way. People will melt chocolate a lot of times in a double boiler. Oh. Otherwise, you'll score the chocolate. You'll burn it. So
thank you for clarifying.
Well, I didn't want you to think it's like it's a touchdown or something.
I knew what you meant.
And then you get it to a certain, you get it to 175 degrees, and then you bring the heat down, let it stabilize, and then you add your essential oil, or if you're using scents that are already pre-done, and your color, if you're going to add color. And then you stir that for 2 minutes, and then you let that cool to 150 degrees. Am I really doing this? Do y'all even care?
Okay, I do.
I stopped listening.
I saw Patrick's just over there. So you let it cool, and then you pour it, and you got to have, you got to get your wick in the thing. Just
do you
right.
put the wick in the bottom and then just like you hold it while it dries?
No, you got to glue with a glue gun, glue the wick to the base of the thing, of the jar, or whatever your container is.
So it stays on the bottom.
So it stays there. It
doesn't float.
Yeah. And then you pour the wax
Who knew?
In.
Who
yeah.
knew? And then so how hard is it to learn to do?
It's not hard at all. I just told you.
But I mean, to actually do it, how was the first one you did successful?
No.
Okay.
No, it takes you a little while to get it down. Because then you also have to keep like extra oil, extra wax from that candle to the side. And then after it's 2 days and it's completely hardened and everything, cured, you go back and you heat that up and you pour that on top of it to give it that smooth. Otherwise, you'll get kind of pits in it. It'll get kind of, it won't look like the candles you buy at a store. So this way it does.
Yeah, these did.
Yeah.
And now you know.
Now you know.
A lot of people asking, because we talked about them on the show, and people were asking, I say a lot, like three or four people asked about if you were going to, if you ever planned on selling your candles.
No. No, I'm not.
Ever?
No, I take that back. I'm selling them next week. Zach's little school he goes to. We homeschool, but once a week he goes to this other supplemental school. And they're doing like a craft thing. And so families bring craft, like baked goods mainly. But I'm going to bring in, like, I'm doing a whole, that's what I'm saying, this whole weekend I'm doing weird stuff. Like, I've got a can of corn, canned corn that's used from Thanksgiving, cleaned it out, and I'm putting a yellow wax dye, and it's going to be canned corn scent. You can buy it online.
A corn candle?
A corn candle.
Oh, dude, you're going to be a corn star.
That's right.
It'd be candle corn.
It's candle corn.
Candle corn.
And then I'm making that. I've got a an old grape jar from grape jelly. I'm making a grape jelly scented one straight out of the jar. You keep the label on it and everything. I'm doing, I'm cutting some more wine bottles to do wine flavored, like Merlot.
This is a 6'3" inch tall man who is pretty big, very corn-fed looking dude, talking about how he makes candles.
Yeah, I'm the most gay non-gay guy you know.
You really are.
Yeah. So
I mean, like we'll drive by in the spring. We'll drive by some stores, floral display out front. You know, and every spring they redo. Everybody does their beds, and I'll drive by and I go, "Hey, what is that yellow flower?" And big deal, be like, "Hydrangeas."
Except for I don't say hydrolyze these.
Well, but you
know, I say pansy.
But no, you throw out like the names, like, you know, oh, that is an African Schmelgenflugen.
Going, sometimes I'll head home. He's on a Friday. I'll head home and I'll stop off at a floral shop and I'll pick out just loose flowers and I'll go and just arrange them and put them in the house in my own arrangement. I don't want them to do it because I do it better.
Again, the gayest non-gay man you've ever met.
Yep.
So, good for you.
You're pretty fierce, dude.
I am fierce.
Pretty fierce. All right. So do we have anything else we need to cover here on the old podcast this
week?
Yeah,
we're going to play the songwriter spotlight.
Oh, yeah, with Whisperin' Bill.
Oh, yes.
This was really cool. You know, he's been around forever. Whether you're into old country music or not, this is a guy who has defined country music for decades. Whisperin' Bill Anderson. And before we get to that, I do want to thank Outdoor Hands again for sponsoring the podcast. Outdoor Hands Skin Therapy Cream. It works on your hands, your feet, your heels, anywhere that you've got dry, cracked skin. You'll want to pick up some Outdoor Hands. That's the name brand. Outdoor Hands. Pick some up today. Your skin will thank you.
You know, we started doing this songwriter spotlight, and today we are honored to have a friend of the show, Whisperin' Bill Anderson.
Woo!
Hey, man.
Good morning.
How are you?
I'm doing well. Not still think you guys get up too early.
We do. That's true.
Can't you do an early morning show later in the day?
The day somebody figures out a way to make that happen, I'm totally in.
Well, you know, musicians are notorious for staying up all night and sleeping all day.
I got 3 hours of sleep last night because we had stuff going on, and it's like, you know what? You just have to trudge through it. 3 hours is, that's not enough.
Hey, as a songwriter, Bill Anderson has written songs like, oh, Whiskey Lullaby, Give It Away, Two Teardrops, Wish You Were Here, and more. We tried to figure out one day how many he wrote, and no one really knows. We think 4,899. But you've got a ton of hits on a lot of songs. One of them that jumps out at you, one that you kind of just go, this is more special. I know they're all like your kids, but one little more special or a cool story behind it?
Well, when you've written as many as I have, there's a lot of cool stories behind a lot of them. Some don't really have stories behind them. That's the amazing thing. People will say, well, tell me the story behind this one or that one. Well, I just sat down and wrote it one day. You know, there's no real story behind it. You mentioned Whiskey Lullaby, of course, and I can't take credit for all the writing on the songs that you mentioned because those were co-written songs. John Randall was the co-writer on the Whiskey Lullaby, and I went into the writing session that day with an idea to write a song called Midnight Cigarette. And John said, I love that idea. The idea was to write a song about a love affair or a relationship that kind of faded out like a
midnight cigarette.
Yeah, cigarette in the ashtray at midnight. John said, I like that, but let me lay something on you here. Said a guy said something to me the other day, and he picked up his guitar, and he said, he put that bottle to his head and pulled the trigger. I said, whoa, forget about the midnight cigarette. I don't know where you're going with this, but let's write that. So we ended up, it was amazing, because we ended up using the line about the midnight cigarette as the opening line in Whiskey Lullaby.
Where's it at? Which one part of that?
The opening line of the song is, yes, it really is. She put him out like the burning end of a midnight cigarette.
Oh, yeah.
She broke his heart. And then it goes on from there. So we were able to kind of use my idea incorporated in the song.
Yeah, but see, now you wasted it. Now you can't write the midnight cigarette song.
No, but somebody else can. They can steal it from me.
Okay.
Yeah, I never steal from myself.
How did it come around that actually getting cut, the song getting cut?
Well, it laid around for about 5 years because nobody was running up and down the street wanting to cut a double suicide drinking song at the time. I will amaze you with this. I bet you could sit here the rest of the morning and never guess who the first act was to put that song on hold, which means that they say, hey, don't play it for anybody else because we're going to record
it. Right. It's like
musician dibs. I've got dibs on that song. I'm going to get, was it a band or a single person?
Yes.
All right.
Oh, that doesn't help.
Okay. Yeah, a group, I guess you'd say. Okay.
Diamond Rio.
No, I'm going to say it was
Montgomery Gentry.
Nope. The Mavericks.
Nope, that's a good guess, though, because it would. You want to know?
Yeah.
It was the Dixie Chicks.
What?
Really?
Well, think about it.
It makes sense. I could actually hear that song being done by Natalie and the girls, and yeah.
They would have done a great job on it.
Well, they were out of the box, and the song was out of the box, you know, outside the parameters of what you'd expect somebody to do. And, of course, before they could get in the studio and record it, their career kind of imploded. And during that time, when it was on hold for them, Brad Paisley had heard it. And he came to me and he said, can I put a secondary hold on that? Well, sure you can.
Yeah, if they don't do it, then I want to do it.
I'm not putting much stock in the fact that he's ever going to do it.
Right.
And then he does do it. And then amazingly, the song was not written as a duet. He called me one day and he said, I think we ought to let that second verse be sung by a girl. What do you think? I said, wow, I never thought of that. And I said, well, who do you have in mind? And he said, well, I don't think there's but two people that could really do it. One would be Dolly Parton. The other would be Alison Krauss. I said, I love them both. Go for it. And then he called me back a few days later and said that Allison's record company had agreed to let her be a part of it. And so that's the way it turned out.
Now, what if you'd have said, no, I don't want either one of them? I mean, would he have stopped there and just done it all by himself?
I don't know. You'll have to ask him. I really don't know.
That's fascinating. That's why I love doing these the songwriter spotlight things.
Yeah.
So many things happen by accident, by coincidence. I mean, they're not necessarily planned. you know, and they just happen. And you just, you know, at the end of the day, all you can do is just say, thank you, Lord. You took that blank sheet of paper and helped me put some words on it.
Bill Anderson is our guest, Songwriter Spotlight. You know, when you look at all the things that you've written, all the songs that you've penned, when you look at Give It Away, a CMA and an ACM Song of the Year, take us back to where you were and how that got into getting cut.
Well, again, I had some pretty good co-writers on this song. Buddy Cannon, the great record producer and one of the most talented people I know, Jamie Johnson. We got together one morning. We had a songwriting appointment, you know, like they do in Nashville these days. And we gathered over at Buddy's office, sat around a little round coffee table drinking coffee, and nobody really had any great idea as to what we might write that day. And Jamie kind of reached over and picked up a guitar, and he said, well, boys, I'm going through a divorce. I said, well, if there's a country songwriter that can't write a song about going through a divorce, he needs to turn in his songwriting card. So Jamie started just strumming the guitar and singing about the night in San Francisco and the picture and Give It Away and all this stuff. And believe it or not, it was Buddy Cannon's idea to do the little talking part in there. You know, I'm kind of known for doing, you know, the recitations and the narration. Right. So I was kind of against it, really. I said, people will think, well, I was in there trying to put the Bill Anderson influence into it. But it was actually Buddy's idea. And of course, it starts off with George Strait saying, you know, she was storming through the house that day, and I knew she was leaving, or whatever the line is. And it just kind of went from there. And it was one of those songs. It was amazing because we wrote it in the morning, and it didn't take us long to write it once we got started. About 4 o'clock that afternoon, we called my guitar player over, and we went into the studio and made just a little guitar vocal demo with Jamie singing it. And by the next day, it was already on hold for George Strait. And then when he went into the studio the next time, he cut it.
And how big of a accomplishment is that, to have George Strait put a song on hold?
Well, you know, George Strait has his choice anytime he records of the top songs by all the songwriters in Nashville. I mean, there was kind of like an epidemic in Nashville. Oh, Strait's getting ready to record. You know, it was like this murmur over Music Row, and everybody's getting their songs ready to send to George Strait. So, you know, he gets the pick of the litter. And to have him zero in on one of your songs and like it enough to record it, and then for it to come off well enough that they want to release it for a single, it's pretty special.
And then for it to earn the accolades and the sales and everything, the success that it did, I think is even more special, because that's like a big pat on your back as well.
Well,
your back pocket.
Yeah, it really is. It's a great, anytime anybody records a song of mine, I consider it a great compliment, because what they're doing is they are staking a part of their life and a part of their career on something that I've helped to create. And there's a certain responsibility that is almost I hope it works, you know. I hope they don't say, well, Bill Anderson's song ruined my career.
You know, do you worry about them screwing up your song? Like, let's say there's a song you're really proud of, and you do it a certain way, and then you know, like, sometimes it goes to a certain producer, and they're going to get creative with it. Are you worried more about them screwing up the song, or are you worried more about the song screwing them up?
I'm not worried about either one. I think the definition of a true artist is somebody that does it his way. Maybe I hear it one way. I'll give you a crazy example. I had a big hit back in the early 60s of a song called Still, just a very plaintive song. Still, though you broke my heart, still. You never will believe who recorded a 7-minute version of that. James Brown.
Really?
Still! Please! Nothing like what I did, but that was James Brown being an artist. That was him painting the picture that he saw.
And he loved your song enough that he wanted to put his interpretation on it.
Yes, and so I take that as a great compliment when somebody does that.
Dude, you had a James Brown song. That's cool.
Yeah, Aretha did one too.
Which one did she do?
She did a song called I May Never Get to Heaven that Conway Twitty had a number one record on.
Oh, wow.
Back about 1980. Yeah, so it's really fun, because when you write a song, I don't write songs for people. I never have just sat down and said, well, let's write one for somebody. But it's just so amazing sometimes where they land.
You Iggy just Azalea write them and, working on one of your songs right now?
I'm sorry?
Yes, exactly.
He's nothing.
Is who?
Yeah, exactly.
Iggy Azalea.
Iggy Azalea, do you know who that is?
Iggy. Yeah, good. All right.
That's good. You passed our test.
Woo! Yay! Points for Bill.
thank you, man, for coming in and kind of sharing some of these stories. It's just fascinating to me. I just love
it. It's like a master class in songwriting. You could sit down and we could talk all day and never cover even half of what people would want to know.
Are you about to play something?
I was just sitting here thinking, we're talking about songwriting. I had a great compliment paid to me not long ago when one of the greatest songwriters of all, Willie Nelson, went in and recorded one of my songs. And when I heard he had recorded it, I thought, well, he'll rewrite it, he'll change it around, but he didn't. People ask me all the time, you know, they say, what does a songwriter do? And I thought we needed to have a song that kind of explained that. Here's what songwriters do. We get to break out of prison, make love to our best friend's wife, have a beer for breakfast in Boston, drink rum in Jamaica that night. We get to tell all our secrets in a code no one understands. We get to shoot all the bad guys and never get blood on our hands. We're heroes, we're schemers, we're drunks, we're dreamers, we're lovers, and sometimes we're fighters. We're the students, we're the teachers, we're the devil, we're preachers, we're true love, but mostly one-nighters. We're the songwriters. We write bridges, cross them, and burn them. Teach lessons, but don't bother to learn them. Our mothers don't know what we're doing or why we stay out all night long. I told mine I was a drug dealer. She said, well, thank God you ain't writing songs. We're heroes, we're schemers, we're drunks and we're dreamers. We're lovers and sometimes we're fighters. We're stupid, we're wise, we're the truth, we're the lies. We're true love, but mostly one-nighters. We're the songwriters. People ask me why I wrote this song. Said, well, I'm the only one who knew the words. Of course, I'm sure Big D and Bubba know the difference between a songwriter and a large pizza. And that is that a large pizza can feed a family of four.
The one and only, the legendary Bill Anderson. Thank you, Bill.
Oh, thank you, guys.
You're the best. We appreciate it. As always, you can get up to date on this and more on our website, BigDandBubba.com.
This was the podcast, but now it's over. But that's okay, because you can listen to the regular show on the radio every day. It was the podcast.